Blog Talk Radio.
I got something in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing, sing on.
Again to On Point. I'm in Studio A and Mr. Edwards, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. How are you in Studio B, broadcasting live from the Apple Studios?
Really good, Mr. Allen, as we celebrate that rare occasion given to us. I don't know if it's holiday or not. Like you said, not only we've been black for 365 days, but we're been probably black for 365,000 years. But anyways, hey. Beautiful day here in the Twin Cities.
Yes, it is.
Temperature's still down there, though it is, I think it is above zero. Let me check the weather. Oh, yeah, it's up to 10. Yeah. It's 10 above.
Yeah, it's a heat wave.
Telling you, man. but it's still slick out there. That was quite a snowstorm we had there yesterday. But what do we have, Mr. Allen? What do we got here?
Well, we got a lot of things going on that we need to cover today, from the NAACP to this incident and follow-up incident at Washburn High School with the noosing of the doll and the baby black doll. Let me put that in there. And also the turn of events surrounding President Obama's visit to the Twin Cities on Monday and why he is here and the political dog and pony show that is getting ready to happen. By certain select individuals within our community.
Absolutely. In fact, the president will, as it pertains to the north side, he will be at the police's, Minneapolis Police Department's training facility on Emerson Avenue North. What is that, 37th and Emerson Avenue North? By the way, it's a closed meeting, Mr. Allen. You know, some of you... journalists had been talking about the possible coverage. No African-Americans other than Al McFarlane at Insight, as I understand, will be issued press credentials.
Wow. Well, you know, Al went out to D.C. and shook the Messiah's hand at the White House in 2008. So I guess
okay.
That little handshake.
Well, here's the thing. I'm puzzled. I mean, a closed meeting, why? I mean, is this about Homeland Security? Are we under threat? You know, unfortunately, we had the bombing of the outside the American embassy in Ankara. That's in Turkey, for those that can read a map. Are we under some state of emergency, if you will? I mean, I'm not understanding. President's coming here to talk about gun violence, Mr. Allen. And you would think that there would be a full opportunity for all citizens, particularly in that particular community, that part of Minneapolis, that there's been such a disproportionate number of young African-Americans, male and female, shot and killed, older African-Americans also beaten to death, stabbed, and et cetera. And I'm not understanding the secrecy. I mean, do they have information about the Mexican cartels that are bringing dope and guns into the upper Midwest and Minneapolis? Is there information about individuals leaving, going overseas to commit terrorist acts. I mean, I'm not understanding. Do you have a feel? Have you heard anything, Mr. Allen?
Well, I got a call the other night. You know, Marsha Mays, who is, her son, unfortunately, was a 3-year-old Terrell Mays.
Back on the 26th of December 2011. Yes, right.
Her son was slain in the house with a stray bullet, or an aim bullet that went through the house. And I've been alerted that the mayor's public policy aide, Sherman Top, as I call him, Patterson, contacted her to stand in next to the president
stand behind him.
And talk about, you know, this tragic incident. But, you know, what I see this as, Mr. Edwards, just, you know, from my personal conservative viewpoint, is that this is just another dog and pony show, because, you know, any rational person understands a weapon cannot hurt anyone unless it's picked up and used. And in North Minneapolis, with all the gun violence there, I mean, what's the point? You can try to take guns on the street, off the street. They've tried all that before, and it doesn't work because there's still people getting killed in North Minneapolis. So to me, this is a dog and pony show for to cover Todd Jones's butt. The Minnesota attorney, and
the U.S. attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota,
yes,
and also the interim head of the ATF, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, who's in trouble. His confirmation is in trouble as we speak in Washington, D.C. By the way, for our national and international audience, Mr. Jones, an African American, has now been cited by Senator Grassley of Iowa as having signed off on a botched sting operation in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in his role as I said, interim head of the ATF. This is was kind of a shock. I don't think that the Obama administration saw this coming. Clearly, Mr. Jones didn't see it coming. The former head of the FBI office here in the Twin Cities for the states of Minnesota and the Dakotas wrote a scathing letter to the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, citing some real significant deficiencies in Mr. Jones's tenure as attorney, U.S. attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota. And boy, this could railroad or sabotage his attempt to be appointed permanent head of the ATF. You know, we've had some other revelations out of here, including a ATF agent a year and a half ago, who was involved in a sting operation in which the gun showed up down in Mexico, involved in a big firefight down there. A lot of Mexicans were killed. So I'm not sure what's happening here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It just seems pretty interesting that all this comes about, and you just hear this buzz in the air, and everyone's flocking to go try to get in to see the president. I'm very curious, Mr. Edwards, to find out who were the hand-picked individuals that from the black community here in the Twin Cities that get the opportunity to meet or talk or see the president.
Well, let me ask you this question, Mr. Allen, and there in Studio A. We've been around a long time. Now, how many town hall meetings and forums have these leaders and heads of organizations, how many town hall meetings have we had, let's say, since 2005? What we had, 7 or 8, 2, 3, 1?
Around gun violence and
yes,
the general.
Gun violence. Yeah.
I would say maybe, 4 to 6 that I've known of, and then some little offshoot ones.
Mr. Allen, I did a check. As far as town hall forums,
okay,
to really discuss, we've had 0.
Oh, you're right. Okay, I understand.
Yeah, we've had press conferences, et cetera, talking about the violence, but not a whole lot about the guns. But we've never had a forum like Congressman Keith Ellison, Democrat, 5th Congressional District, Minnesota, had in the suburb of St. Louis Park, which is in his congressional district, at Temple Israel, I think. And, you know, I mean, that's all well and good, but the Jewish community here has really not been the victim of gunplay. Maybe, you know, maybe they have in the Middle East, you know, or Buenos Aires, Argentina, or somewhere like that. And I was always wondering why that kind of meeting wasn't held in the area that is the most threatened and under siege, and that's North Minneapolis. But I don't know. I guess, you know, big politicians make little decisions.
And having it out there, just I remember that didn't make much of any sense. And so, I mean, some of these issues, I mean, there's a lot of issues here, Mr. Edwards, and it is Black History Month. And if you don't respect the black president, you know, I mean, how can you respect Black history? And so it seems like these people are just taking the stigma of the word Africa, which when people think of Africa, they think of savages. You go
Tarzan,
in, you can't get
Tarzan,
out.
Tarzan.
Yeah. A drought, a famine, people walking around
having dictatorships.
Yes. Yeah. And they just transfer that over here to the Black community of the United States, especially Americans. So
now, do they think about when Black Africa was colonized and there was significant brutality under European masters, if you will? Oh, we don't talk about that, though.
No, no, we're not supposed to talk about that. We are supposed to not have any conversations that would make us seem like victims. Okay. Although, yes.
I've been hearing that a lot from a lot of young and older Caucasians here in the country here recently, that Black folk need to stop being victims. Now, I grew up at a period of time when the most victimized piece of American and European and other history were the Jews and the Holocaust. So is it all right for Jewish people to claim victimization? And so you Black folks can't claim that? Is that what you're saying to me, Mr. Allen?
That's exactly what I'm saying to you, Mr. Edwards. I had a rather heated argument with a Jewish person, a woman who told me that, you know, these Black Americans are just playing victims. And she wanted to explain to me how the Somalis and the East Africans and other folks can come over here and open up businesses and you know, they don't, you know, act like us Black Americans do, and we're just victims. I said, so, you know, slavery went on. Slavery was around longer than racism was, actually. And so you look at that, and you start to talk about, you know, they start to talk about the Holocaust, you know.
Right.
And that's fine. Oh, we can talk about this. This is what happened to us. And, I mean, you know, again, what a difference a race makes, you know.
You're right about that. Because I've always been puzzled because, as I said, as a younger Negro, in school, which was many, many, many years ago, decades ago, you know, I was told the only victimization that had really taken place, because we would always dismiss as an example the victimization and the Holocaust that was rendered against the red people of this continent, okay,
mm-hmm.
the indigenous people of this continent. And I thought if there's anyone that had a right to claim victimization, it was the red and the blacks. But you're right. I mean, I'm hearing this more and more and more, that there really is no inalienable right for African Americans to claim victimization, quote unquote, victims of anything. Just pull your damn self up by your bootstraps. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Stop whining and crying. I mean, you people, Don, have had it good. You know what I'm saying? You people have really. I mean, you were emancipated in 1863. Okay, still waiting on that 40 acres and a mule. Okay, which was an actual provision of the documents of Emancipation Proclamation, and then the additional documents. And then by 1876, things started getting reversed. But I'm not. I guess I'm just not understanding where it was that we so alienated our former slave masters. Oops.
Yeah, yeah. You went there, Mr. Edwards. You went there.
Yeah. Okay, what do we got locally here, Don? We're hanging black dolls in effigy, and white students, and even some students of color are saying that they didn't know that was offensive. They had a meeting the other night at a facility on the south side of Minneapolis, about 25, 26 people showed up. Of course, it was extremely chilly night Thursday.
Yes, it was.
Wind chill here in the Twin Cities was 31 below zero. So are we going to get that straightened out there at Washburn? What's your thinking?
Well, I'm just thinking the white parents at Washburn organized above and beyond any capacity that the Minneapolis Public School Board and the schools could even organize. And so what they have done, they have did damage control and did a cleansing and sanitation of this particular event.
Racial cleansing. You're not talking like racial cleansing.
Well,
and
actually have taken this, taken the power away from these four white students hanging this black baby doll inside the school. So at this point, it's business as usual. I haven't gotten any updates, Mr. Edwards, regarding the meeting that went on Thursday night. But, I mean, if 26 people were there, you know, there was 2,600 at the other meeting at Washburn the week before. And so yeah. That show, and plus another point to make that we do have to point out, there was no Black flagship representation. There was not a press conference from the Council on Black Minnesotans, the NAACP, the Urban League, or any other Black organization in the Twin Cities.
Ministerial Alliance, things like that.
Yes, yes, yes. No.
The Leadership Alliance under the auspices of Gary Cunningham,
mm-hmm.
Number two man in Northwest Area Foundation. You're right. They didn't issue any press releases, did they?
It was like a stand down, like someone was going to shoot Kennedy or something. They just said stand down.
Okay.
And no one came up. No one said anything. And I mean, I tried to, push the envelope a little bit and put some stuff out there like, hey, well, why haven't you said anything? Why isn't there? Well, we already know. And for our national, local and national listeners and international listeners, you know, Minneapolis is a weird bird. As far as it pertains to the minority ethnic communities and leadership, but especially the leadership in the Black community, because you cannot get any traction with anything that you want to present, or if these incidents, you know, come up. Like we were talking a few weeks ago, the DeMauro Booker, the young man that was beaten to a coma by Minneapolis police. We have yet to have a statement from any of the Black leadership.
And you know, I'm told the last time that his lawyers responded, and one of them who we had on this program and gave them access to go on the public agenda, Mr. Williams is still in the federal detention center at Elk River, Minnesota, which is about 30 miles north here of the Twin Cities. He's still there with his injuries and et cetera, you know. And what I'm hearing is that. You know, they're just going to wait for this to kind of go away, and he's going to be required to plea bargain. He's looking at 15 years because they maintain that he was a felon in possession of a gun that was found 2 days after the automobile that he was in, which was not his automobile, was impounded. And, you know, you can find additional more current. And when I say current, I'm talking in terms that we were making these statements within a couple of days after things were happening. You're always welcome to go back on demand as it pertains to this program. I'm just so saddened by what has happened to the Williams family and to Mr. Williams, but there is no interest whatsoever in this city about him being almost beaten to death. He still has those three plates in his face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where his jaw and cheekbone and et cetera were crushed, his eye socket. But, hey, that's the way things work here.
Well, Mr. Irwin, there's something here that I want to share with you that I find a little bit ironic. You know, on Monday, January 28th, the Washington Post published a story that said NAACP president, Black people are worse off under Obama.
Was that the National Board Chair? Is that right?
Jealous. Yeah, he said he told the Washington Post the country's back to pretty much where they were before the president started. And I mean, even though, my conservative viewpoints and stuff, and I feel like I'm kind of a Colin Powell Republican because I did vote for Obama because he was the best man for the job as far as I'm concerned.
Okay.
But you know, when I look at the National Urban League, who was pimped by the Vote No campaign, and Ben Jealous, you know, what about, let's do a story, Black American do it badly under the NAACP and the National Urban League leadership. Because that is a factual statement right there. And secondly, how did a white man get in charge of the NAACP?
Who was that?
I'm just kidding. Ben Jealous.
Oh, well, now, come on. You know, Ben Jealous is just a bright-skinned brother. I mean, we're not taking on it. By the way, you would get some debate, Mr. Allen. And by the way, you want to give out the number because the phone lines are open.
Yes, sir.
You would get some debate from people like in Arkansas, East Memphis, Blytheville, Arkansas, our two Pacific chapters, Houston, Texas, big chapter there, and Benton Harbor, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Those folks are all out at the Image Awards or whatever it is that the NAACP does out there in California. They're out there picketing and demonstrating.
Yeah, as they should be. Now, those Image Awards, NAACP Image Awards, Mr. Edwards, I was just looking at something over here in Studio V here. I'm just was checking out some things online. You know, that takes a few million dollars to put together. There are corporate.
Oh, that's right. I see your assistant just came into my studio. Yes.
And there's corporate sponsors involved, and I mean, wow, just, you know, to put on a television show that is usually terrible and very low in the rating.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm thinking, why doesn't the NAACP use that energy to address public policy in Black America? I mean, you have folks like Soledad O'Brien and Melissa Harry Paris just losing their minds out there, you know, speaking on behalf of Black America. And they're so far from the center that it's not helping us. But we have a call already without even putting the number out.
All right, let's get it.
Yeah.
You're live on the air. Go ahead.
That's what's happening. I'm an informed consumer, so I get the number off of the website. But I did want to talk briefly about the Washburn meeting that was held at the Bethany Community Center.
Oh, great.
As you mentioned, it was a day that I believe maybe the wind chill was 20 to 25 degrees below zero.
31 degrees below zero wind chill. Go ahead.
And in the sign-up list for names, emails, and numbers, we had a sign-up list that was 32 noted on there. All African-American in attendance, so all Black people attended, which is sets any record for any school board meeting held whenever they hold school board meetings for the Minneapolis Public Schools, which is obviously promoted and dictated to the audience of Minneapolis in general with millions of dollars. So that community engagement for a particular day like that is exceptional. Number two, in terms of the press release that I'm actually we could have had a little more assistance, particularly from our Black media. But I will say this, just looking at the issue from the outside of it, you know, as somebody in the public, looking at the issue and the concern about the issue, I will say, unbelievably, it appears that the mainstream white media is more concerned about this issue or reporting it about this issue, at least from concerns from the community standpoint, than our Black media is, which is quite an irony, I think, and I think that should be probably part of a public dialogue. Where is our Black media about Black issues at this point, or are we just about spectating about Black issues?
It depends on, sir, if what Black media are you talking about? Because I know that Mr. Edwards and myself have covered this and talked about it on now for, what, 3 weeks in a row on Saturday, and I have two or three stories on several different platforms that talks about this.
Well, I'm not even talking about your platform per se. I'm talking about in general. When I say Black media, that encompasses a whole bunch of things, which is
I don't know if this will ever make it to Insight News here locally. So
it's astounding that Insight News had what I saw was more pictures enlarged of things like teddy bears for bank advertising or something like that. And real
well, you know, one of the things that, for the purpose of transparency and full disclosure, the publisher and owner of Insight is also the board chair of the Urban League, and maybe that explains why you haven't heard anything from your civil rights organizations either.
Yeah, let me just ask a question, because I know you guys have a full platform, and I'll try to check you guys out. But moving forward, especially with the activities, events of Black History Month and how we idol worship to great Black leaders of the past who stood up for different issues of freedom, justice, and equality for all of us right now. What do you think the tone of this month is going to be about that time and place? And what kind of role modeling do we see happening with that time and place, particularly with our youth, who I think are very disconnected from the same old stories of the various different Black leaders that we love to talk about, but we seem to not really follow in the footsteps of standing when it's time to stand on issues of great importance in the community, whether they be
Well, let's answer that, because you're kind of giving a long dissertation of a question that.
No doubt, because it needs to be long.
We all know that we're looking at. There's two sets of leaders. So you have the national leaders, and past and present, and then you have the local leadership. The problem was, you know, this community was given $3 million over the last 2 years to create a historical museum. And I think a lot of folks, let's say a year and a half ago, had high expectations that many of the questions that you're asking would be something that could be reflected on, debated if it needed to be, and et cetera. Unfortunately, the African-American museum doesn't exist. The $3 million is gone. And in some respects, the accurateness of black history in the state of Minnesota has not been unveiled, quote unquote. And so it's an interesting question. I mean, it's a question that probably should be answered by those that were involved in significant fundraising. As I said before, the amount of money that was raised for the African American Museum was $3 million. And we should just have an outstanding operation. We don't have anything. And so I think that, you know, we ask the question and we maybe answer it ourselves. You know, those folks need to answer what it is that their expectations are. Now, you asked a question, what do you think the format will be? My sense is, sir, based on what I've been watching and what I've been hearing on a number of different issues, is that our youth will be told that, you know, what's most important is to be conciliatory, whatever that's supposed to mean. Don't raise too many questions, and certainly do not insist on the best possible education and knowledge of information and facts. I mean, that's what I see happening. And the one thing that is not going to happen is that there will not be a review of those days in this enclave when African Americans not only took to the streets but fought pitched battles in the courtrooms and et cetera to deal with racism. That's not to even be talked about from every indication that I'm getting, and I think my colleague, Mr. Allen, would concur.
Yeah,
but,
yes,
you know, it's something that people can choose to do. You attempted to do that at the format Thursday night. Community is just going to have to decide if they're prepared to come out in more significant numbers and start dealing with this obstruction and this abuse of their rights and their freedom.
Mr. Allen, can Mr. Edwards, just real briefly, can I make a suggestion and I'm going to hang up the phone?
Mm-hmm.
Since this is a local, national, and international kind of format, for a future show and for those living outside of the Minneapolis area, I suggest that you have a title of a future show called The Minneapolis Negro, and then we just do a psychological kind of assessment of the black population here in Minneapolis. All right,
you know, we actually
brother.
Appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Yeah.
Caller must not realize that we have done that, Mr. Allen, if I'm not correct. We've done programs in which we talked in terms of profiling the Negro leadership, black leadership, whatever, African-American leadership. I mean, we've done that. You know, we've opened these phone lines. We had a couple programs that were 2 hours long. A year and a half, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
All we got was a lot of criticism from Negroes who are in leadership positions who were very upset with us that we even raised questions relevant to their validity, their effectiveness, their authenticity, and et cetera. So at some point, other folks are going to have to step up also and ask these kinds of questions. But right now, this, you know, the African-American community here in Minnesota is in bad shape.
Yeah.
In fact, it's quite clear that I doubt the president will be really told and made to understand just how bad it really is in the African-American community here in the state of Minnesota.
I agree 100%. And Mr. Edwards, you know, when our last caller was talking about, you know, the format, or the events for Black History Month, what's going to happen? I just scooted over to the other computer here, and I looked on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
Now there's a party every Friday night at Juke Joints all downtown Minneapolis and St. Paul. There is not one where I feel personally culturally specific event, you know, for Black history. Secondly, you had talked about the museum. And one thing that I come to realize, Mr. Edwards, is that, you know, some of us that are out here that have some sense of business acumen We've never seen a blueprint, a business plan, a RFP for bids, or anything involving that building in South Downtown Minneapolis, I should say. And so with that said, you know, how do we know? We had a local reverend here in town, Reverend Jerry McAfee, write on my Facebook page that that wasn't enough money to open up a museum. Well, I don't know if it was or was not enough money, because I was not privileged like in other organizations, the Swedish organization here in town, the historical museum, who put their budgets online and have people give people the opportunity to donate and actually see where the money's going. So without seeing that back information, you know, right now I can say off the cuff, if someone put $3 to $5 million in my pocket, I'd have a museum and about 6 radio shows. Okay.
Yeah, and by the way, that was incorrect observation by the minister. There have been African American museums put together in Omaha, Nebraska, Des Moines, Iowa. The Baseball and Jazz Hall of Fame in Kansas City, Missouri, a beautiful edifice, was put together with less than $3 million as it pertains to getting the structure up and running and et cetera. So I don't buy that. You have facilities that are up and operating with $500,000, okay? I'll tell you what, though, if $3 million wasn't enough, it sure was enough to get spent.
Yeah, it sure was. And we have a caller, Mr. Edwards.
All right, let's get him.
Okay, you're live on the air. Who's calling?
Hi, my name is Joanne. I was having trouble deciphering your voices, you two gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know which one of you it was that said that you voted for Barack Obama.
Conservative friend, Don Allen.
Me, myself, yes.
Mr. Allen?
Yes.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. I understand. And I think you're the gentleman with a little bit of a lower voice, so I'll make sure I listen to your words.
Right. And by the way, I also voted for Barack Obama, and I'm the militant left winger.
Very good.
All right, thank you. All right.
Thank you. Bye.
See, Don, you had to explain. See, people know that you're kind of a conservative, but as you said, you voted for Barack Obama. But actually, the two hosts of this program both voted for President Barack Obama. So we just want to clear the air. What else do we have? By the way, just very quickly.
Okay.
Did we give the phone number? I don't think we've given the phone number out, Mr. Allen.
No, we haven't.
Let's do that, even though we have calls coming in.
The phone line is open. You can dial 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And if you don't have a quarter, you can dial 877-537-2878. Again, that toll-free number is 877-537-2878. And you're listening to On Point, broadcasting live from downtown Minneapolis.
Thank you. From the studios, McIntosh. Very tense situation right now, Mr. Allen, in the Middle East with the sneak attack by Israeli Air Force on targets inside of the sovereign nation of Syria. Syrians say that a defense research facility was bombed. The Israelis and the United States are saying that that convoy was still inside of Syria in sovereign Syrian territory, maintaining that allegedly the convoy was taking long-range anti-aircraft missiles to the Hezbollah fighters in Lebanon. A lot of tension. The Chinese and the Russians have taken a very aggressive position and posture. This also comes on the heels of the North Koreans talking extremely ugly as it pertains to their neighbors to the south. And, I mean, that's so sad. These are same people, same history, same lineage, same everything, but have been in conflict for over 60 years. You know, state of war actually still exists between South Korea, the United States, and North Korea. But anyways, keep your eye on that situation in the Middle East. There could very well be retaliation. I'm not sure that the bombing of the American embassy or outside the American embassy yesterday in Ankara, Turkey, mm-hmm. was tied to that, but it could have been tied to the Patriot missiles that had been brought in And there we have, again, we have Europeans, members of NATO, particularly the Germans and the Dutch, killing people of color.
Yeah, that seems to be the mode there going on by the United States government and other governments across the world. You know, let's get those people covered. You know, that brings up an interesting little sidebar topic here. You know, Mr. Edwards, I was in an African philosophy class, and the professor brought up a very interesting point. He told the class, and since it's Black History Month, I feel this is appropriate. He says, what do you think about when you think of Africa? You know, and it was a strange question because I've never been asked that question. And
now, was he a black or a white instructor or another race?
He is from Nairobi, Kenya. He is the African. He's a philosophy person for, you know, I guess he's the head of it over there in the college here in St. Paul. And so he said, you know, let's just think back. What is your first encounter with Africa? And so I had to raise my hands, and I says, wow, this is kind of interesting because my first encounter with Africa, or just Africa period, was in 1967 when Tarzan was come on TV, and it was a jungle. It was a scary place. The natives would kill you. It was violent. They were starving. There was half clothes. That's one of the reasons when I was a kid I would watch Tarzan, because you sure to see something naked running around there. And then others went into the new Tarzan and the Lion King. And the professor said, you know, we have great problems with Disney portraying what is African, because we know lions don't talk. Okay.
Yeah,
and
right.
So, and monkeys and things like that in the jungle. And it was very interesting because I was then, you know, he really wants you to do some critical thinking, because I was then able to correlate how that stigma of Africa traveled across the Atlantic to the United States, which is a stigma that still, you know, from slavery, you know, that first boat ride on, that still exists within the black community, with black people. When you ask mainstream, I'm talking about Europeans or white folks, Caucasians, whatever you want to call them, their thoughts about black, you know, or Africa are just negative. And I'm wondering, wow, you know, it's Black History Month again, and it looks like we go backwards a few years each year.
Well, Don, here's what you have to keep in mind. I've got a couple of years on you, and was there when the movement exploded on the national and world scene. But you got to remember this stigmatization to stigmatize the sons and daughters of the Africa. You got to remember, this was a part of what was needed as what is now referred to as propaganda, disinformation, misinformation, etc. And it had to do with the fact that the Christian Bible was such an important instrument in justifying, quote unquote, the bringing of a more civilized doctrine and position into the quote unquote black wilderness. And part of that had to do with destroying all those things that were important and sacred and germane to, quote-unquote, the black souls, if you will, of that part of the world. And what happened, you know, the cannon and, you know, black powder, you know, is a powerful incentive to get people to think the right way, get your mind right, as we like to say. And you have to understand that much of this was a part of a very significant and in some respects magnificent propaganda ploy to destroy the image of the people of color, be it in Africa, be it in South America, Central America, be it in Asia, or et cetera. And it, you know, it took 200 or 300 years. It wasn't like it was done the first 20 months that Christopher Columbus, you know, was here in the Western Hemisphere. I mean, it took a long period of time. And Willie Lynch, you know, the white terrorist, you know, helped explain that and craft that as the importance of breaking the spirit, breaking the back of the blacks, if you will. And so I would submit, from my point of view and the many discussions that I well remember during the days when it was okay to talk proudly about black history, black progress, black success, and et cetera, that we had no problem dealing with that. You're really not allowed now to even suggest that Christendom, if you will, was an instrument that had a lot to do with destroying, quote-unquote, the culture, if you will, of the African, if you will. I use the word again in conclusion. It was an excellent propaganda tool. You had to make even your own kind believe that these people that we were bringing, we being them, on the slave ships and et cetera, and taking to the slave markets in Charleston and other places, that these people were not worthy of being given the consideration and the compassion of a white person, that these were savages. Now, there were people that bought into that, and they knew absolutely and totally different. They knew that that was not true. But you got to remember, man, slavery became a significant economic crutch and instrument of profit.
Yes.
For people that didn't even begin to have the kind of resources that they have ripped off and out of black Africa and brown South America and yellow Asia and et cetera. And that's really what it came down to.
Wow. And speaking of savages, Mr. Edwards, we were just – I have to go back to this because I just overlooked this. And the papers are sitting here, and I should have talked about this a minute ago. But you had mentioned the Image Awards, that some of the branch members and members of the NAACP are out West Coast, and they're protesting the NAACP.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, you know that this week, earlier this week, that the NAACP National headquarters was sued by Houston's Four Seasons Hotel after they left the 103rd annual convention down there for not paying a bill in excess of $100,000. And so I'm just wondering how this thing is looking bad, you know, when we look at this and you have these brothers going into these, you know, eating the best food, staying in the best rooms, having the best hookers, you know, and doing what they do. You know, and then
As a member of both organizations many, many years ago, when they were still at least trying to fight the battle, I can tell you, when you go to a national convention, particularly the Urban League, the NAACP, a little less because, you know, there's a more significant economic base with the Urban League types than as opposed to the NAACP types. So a lot of them brothers and sisters were doing real well. That it was, you know, I used to hear the leadership. I mean, they would say, man, the best of everything for us. Mm-hmm. Okay, because it was on the backs of the people. And there were debates, ugly debates, during the time that I and some others were involved from different places, both in the NAACP but specifically the Urban League. And it was just interesting, man, how well the leaders were doing. I mean, you know, eating well, drinking well, as you said, fraternizing. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And so when I heard the same information and talked to a couple of NAACPers in the South, a couple of them who I do believe are in Los Angeles as we speak, they were saying that part of the criticism that has come out of Houston, and I think one of the Houston newspapers definitely pointed out what the receipts looked like and what they were buying. You know, I mean, it wasn't like they were buying books and things for little children of color in the Houston public school system or helping with clinics and et cetera there in Houston. I mean, they was eating the best of the best, buddy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All
shrimp,
yeah.
Caviar, you know what I mean? Filet mignon, you know, just like our leaders eat here when they go down to J.D. Oyts and Monte Carlos and eat them good steaks, man, and kick back and shrimp. And, you know, talk in terms of, you know, they're meeting to put forward the best possible effort on behalf of their downtrodden constituents.
Yeah, exactly.
But now that figure again was 100,000. The NAACP ran out on a $100,000 bill.
Yeah, it's actually 995, but by the time they get to it, it was for room charges, banquet, and finance charges, and during that 103rd convention. But, you know, people are really looking into this because they're saying the National Association for Advancement of Colored People claims to be nonpartisan, but it uses millions of dollars to promote the DF or the Democrat agenda. And so you have some conservative critics worrying about their nonprofit status, and they're using it as a shell to cover up its $14 million annual budget from being taxed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so in 2010 and 2012, the NAACP voter fund, Americans for Equity, got about $10 million. Mm-hmm. And that was for voter education, Mr. Edwards. And they basically used it, you know, and you can't blame them in every way. I'm going to let them slide on this one a little bit because they used it to energize Democratic voters. I mean, as a Republican, I can say this. We didn't have any option, okay? And that was obvious. But, you know, at some point, there's going to be a fair playing field where there's going to be great candidates on both sides. I don't know when, maybe after Hillary wins and spends 8 years in the White House. But at some point, there will be. And I'm just being honest. You know, I'm keeping it real. I don't have no malt liquor here at the studio. But yeah, it's going to be pretty interesting to see, you know, how that all works out.
Right.
All right,
let's do this also because I've had inquiries. Just want to update on our beautiful People's Stadium here, the new home of the Minnesota Vikings, which is slated to be completed by July of 2016. Well, in fact, it has to be because if they don't, the Vikings will be absolutely free to relocate to Southern California. Oops. The decision was put off for another 7 days in selecting the general construction contractor who will oversee the $753 million construction contract. Boy, that's a lot of money. As Mr. Allen and I reported last week, and Mr. Allen played the tape of an intercepted discussion, if you will. I say intercepted because clearly the civil rights director and the head of diversity for the Metropolitan Council here, a semi-state agency, were not aware that they were going to be displayed across the world on YouTube. But anyways, there does not seem to be any opportunity or for access on the part of the African-American community as it pertains to contracts, jobs, and et cetera. I'm calling it at 1 point to 1.5 combination of jobs and money or contracts, if you will. And also, Mr. Allen, you need to be made aware that it was told that both you and I were liars when we talked about the – oh, and for our veterans around the country, there will be no veterans preference or any consideration for veterans to be employed on the People's Stadium, the Viking Stadium. And before you jump through the ceiling, Mr. Allen has also posted that on YouTube across the world.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing that given what our veterans do for this nation to keep this country safe, irrespective of how we may be critical of the drones and et cetera, that these veterans come back home, and particularly if they're a veteran of color, they're basically being told that there will be no veterans preference, though there was certainly veterans preference, Mr. Allen, even though she's appointed when Velma Corvell became director of the Civil Rights Department. Her veteran status as a former naval person certainly served her well. You know, people tend to forget. I guess she tends to forget that.
Yeah, she did. And you know, Mr. Edwards, we put in a complaint, filed a complaint with Minnesota State Legislative Auditor, who refused to move on this in spite of us having the actual recording. And It's really funny. Well, it's not funny. It's shameful that these people don't understand or read their own Minnesota statutes regarding.
I know it. And James Noble, the legislative auditor that Mr. Allen is making reference to, has had a pretty good history. But now I kind of realize that his tenaciousness has to do with protecting the rights of white folks. In a situation like this, the decision was made that both veterans and persons of color weren't important enough for the legislative auditor to even open a case file with respect to what was captured on tape. And there will be no category under the so-called 32%. Hey, wonder how you're doing, Commissioner Lindsay. Kevin, that's Kevin Lindsay, the state human rights commissioner. There will be no category and consideration, nor will there be any numerical or percentage figures kept under the so-called 32% clause of African Americans that will be hired. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, that's real fascinating. And then we, I mean, we have it on tape. They said it point blank at the meeting. And again, Mr. Edwards, I got to bring this up again. Again, our leaders, actually, I'm not even going to call them leaders anymore. This Minneapolis spokespersons, even Minneapolis Urban League, NAACP, Council on Black Minnesotans have not made a move and had not said nothing here. And it's really funny because, you know, there's a lot of good brothers moving up here, or sisters moving up here from Atlanta, Mississippi, Florida, Houston, the West, East Coast, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, and I don't know what happens what they get once they get up here, but I guess they're pretty active in their own towns, but it just everything seems like it shuts down, Mr. Edwards, and I'm a little concerned altogether about this.
Well, I think we should. Again, the phone lines are open for any calls with respect to what's going on, particularly in the, we're now into the second day of Black History Month, if you will. It'll be interesting to see how much Black history we really talk about in that we don't have an institution, that would, you know, specifically deal with Black history. I mean, like we said, we thought we were going to have a Black historical museum here in our beloved state, $3 million, and that was the white folks' money, too, was made available and just disappeared. cannot be accounted for. The house where the museum was to have been located sits absolutely empty. In fact, I think they still got that old television set sitting out in the back. Nothing's happening at all. Nothing at all. But this is Black History. We'll be doing a lot of singing of songs and hymns and et cetera. By the way, if you go back on your website, Mr. Allen, you'll see there are a lot of activities like choirs and et cetera. But the tickets, you know, like O'Shaughnessy and some of the Ordway, the beautiful Ordway in St. Paul, top-notch operations, anywhere from $20 to $60 to $80, you know, to go see about the Negro history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I don't think a lot of Black folk are able to really afford. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
no, I agree.
Yeah. But, hey, this is Black History Month. Maybe folks can get some of the history correct, if you will. If anyone has any questions though, about Black history here in Minnesota, hey, give Don and Ron a call. Okay, we'll help you out with it in the absence of we don't have a museum.
Yeah, and I'm looking here, and Mr. Edwards, the last event in the community, it looks like, that they have for Black History, February 24th, 2012, at 9 p.m., at Golden Times Cafe in St. Paul. And I don't see anything like this. And it said 13 were going, 4 maybe, and 474 were invited. But that's just, you know, Facebook gauge, which...
Now, this was last year, February of last year?
Yeah, February of last year. So I don't even, they didn't even take the thing off offline. So I'm looking at it, I'm looking at it right now, thinking, okay, well, are they doing that this year too, or what the hell is really going on here? So, yeah, I'm looking at that. I'm rather shocked, and just, you know, just to see that. But and did you say you already saw, Mr. Edwards, the Who is Black in America?
Yes. But Soledad O'Brien? Soledad O'Brien?
Yeah. I boycotted Soledad O'Brien, so I mean I'm not watching it or any of it. So
yes, well I always watch all of my Fourth Estate associates and friends, and it was interesting. It's basically cut out of the same, you know, productive cloth of other programs that, you know, she's done, like Silicon Valley and stuff like that. Black in America, those kinds of things.
Well, interesting. So, yeah. Well, I don't know, you know, what we're going to expect here Monday and how the traffic is, because, you know, when the president's in town, any time he goes in, they block a bunch of streets off.
Yeah, well, the area and vicinity around the fortress that he will be holding the closed meeting with leaders to talk about gun violence and guns, if you will, that area is a high-profile security area, a lot of homeland security activities there. We They have. They have significant communications capabilities there in the police department's training academy, if you will. I was kind of surprised, Mr. Allen, because I would have thought that the president would have decided to have a meeting like that. Well, there's no space because half the time now they tell me the heat isn't on in the Urban League. But anyways, I would have thought initially he would have had the photo op in the offices of Congressman Keith Ellison, but I guess his Secret Service security detail decided they wanted to, because of the level of violence in that area, that they wanted to have it in an extremely secure fortress-like facility. And that is a fortress-like building up there.
I mean,
and also has a couple floors underground, as does the 4th Precinct, though.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, he could have also went down to the Target Center and had a big boom-ba. You know, the kind of thing he did when he came in town here during 2012 and 2008 and, you know, where the Target Center was just packed over capacity. And
I think
that's, you know, for him to come in town to get a liberal hand job, I think that you ought to let everybody participate.
Yeah, and well, that's why I said I'm not understanding why this is a closed meeting unless, you know, they're talking in terms that they finally found out who's bringing all the guns in to the hood, if you will. And maybe he and the U.S. attorney, Mr. Jones, who is under fire to be head of the ATF, maybe they have some update that they'll share with the leadership about who they're getting ready to arrest and who they're getting ready to take into custody. I know that the county attorney here, Mike Freeman, has indicated that they intend to toughen the sentences. In fact, they're talking in terms that gun violence here now could result in a colored person, black person, receiving up to life in prison.
Yeah, but they see at some point, Mr. Edwards, you know, and they might announce something different at this meeting, but at some point they got to figure out, you know, there's no black-owned gun manufacturers in the United States.
That's right.
Okay, that's the first thing. And secondly, Smith & Wesson, I read in the Star Tribune yesterday, that's their local newspaper here, that R.T. Ryback is looking into ammunition companies here in Minnesota to see if they donate to the NRA. And he will try to take the city's business elsewhere. Well, if that's the case, the Minneapolis police are going to be loading their weapons with mace. Because if they want to...
Yeah, you know, that is just so much hyperbole, if you will, that RT is talking about. In fact, the department just at the end of the last year put in another big order for ammunition and munitions and et cetera. I mean, I found that to be rather disconcerting, that to hear this lame duck mayor talk in terms that he was going to check out the gun manufacturers, the ammunition manufacturers, et cetera. He already knows. I mean, this guy is the vice chairman, of the Democratic National Committee. You mean to tell me he doesn't know? He hasn't been in meetings since Newtown, Connecticut, tragically, and people haven't talked in terms of who in the heck is giving donations, but not only to the Republicans, but also to the Democrats.
Exactly.
In fact, we got a couple, you know, Democratic liberals here in the state of Minnesota. They get a nice package.
Yeah.
From quote unquote the gun lobby, if you will, and particularly ammunition manufacturers, gun manufacturers, and et cetera. But hey, I guess we'll be foon sped. We got about 2 minutes left here. I guess we'll be foon sped what they want to foon sped us as it pertains to this closed meeting that they're having on Monday.
Yeah, well, they also might be announcing Monday that they're going to be buying all the munitions from China, you know, and that'd be unfortunate because China doesn't have any lead. So,
well, you know, we've outsourced, everything abroad anyways, including millions of American jobs, if you will. They decide to, you know, outsource the next series of contracts. I mean, can't you see the Pentagon notifying ammunition manufacturers and gun manufacturers in the United States that the Pentagon intends to do no more business with them? As many wars as we have to fight in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I would bet that the budget alone for just the purchase of ammunition has got to be up in the $25 to $40 to $45 billion, if not more.
So at least, you know, all those bunkers in Fort Lewis, Fort Jackson, Fort Lee, Fort Liz Lost in the Woods, Fort Leonard Woods, and all those places.
Fort Carson out there in Colorado, where we took we took our covert operations training. Yeah, go ahead.
and all these places out there. I mean, they have bunkers that are filled with ammunition. You know, and just feel. I had a friend come back from Port Lewis, Mr. Edwards, not too long ago. I says, "Well, you guys didn't take that ammunition to Iraq or Afghanistan with you?" And he goes, "No." I went, "You didn't take any?" He says, "We each took about 4 or 5 magazines filled from some of the ammunition that they had laying around, but everything was shipped in fresh." Okay.
Absolutely.
I was like, wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
that Fort Lewis has been a hotbed of illegal weapons trade. In fact, that's where the bomb that was attempted to be exploded in Spokane, Washington, a couple years ago during Martin Luther King, that's where the bomb was made. That bomb, that biological chemical bomb that luckily some city workers for the city of Spokane found it, and they detonated. Well, they were able to defuse it in time, or disarm it, as they like to say. That the material came from Fort Lewis.
Okay, and Ms. Evers, we're right under 12.
All right then.
Okay, so we'll be back next week.
All right.